You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And we have Ribsy as our guest today. Hi, Ribsy.
What up, what up? How's it going?
I first want to say we feel like this is way overdue, obviously, but also I want to say you just got married. Congratulations,
oh,
first
man.
Of all.
Woo.
I did. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Well, so exciting.
Technically, I got married in March, but it doesn't count until you have a party. So
yes, exactly.
That was last weekend.
Pandemic wedding. I know all about it.
Exactly.
For our listeners who may not know you, do you mind giving us a background on who you are, how you get into photography?
Yeah, definitely. So as you said, I'm Ribsy. I'm from New York City. I'm from Uptown Washington Heights, where all the Dominicans are at. That's my people. Yeah, and basically, I do a lot of different things nowadays with regards to photography. Obviously, on my own, I have, you know, very big passion for film photography. Shoot lots of different cameras, film formats, always messing around with something. And I do lots of darkroom printing as well at home. I've been to a darkroom once, but everything else I've ever done has been in my bathroom here in
wow.
London.
Nice.
And that's color, black and white, all kinds of random messing around, you name it. And yeah, so that's what I like to do specifically. But I do a lot of YouTube stuff as well. I've got a YouTube channel that I've been running since February of last year. So
nice.
Just before the pandemic, I decided to jump in. And then the pandemic was in some ways a bit of a gift when it comes to YouTube.
Yeah.
So took advantage of that. And then Instagram. Yeah, I'm on Instagram all the time. A lot of photography stuff, but also just kind of documenting my everyday life, usually like what I'm eating and like what crazy stuff I see in the streets. So yeah, photography's in and out kind of all over the place, but I just try to connect with people as much as possible by putting stuff out there, talking, you know, engaging, all that kind of thing.
That's so cool. Cause I can't believe it's only been a year. Like I feel
I
like I've been watching your channel for a pretty long time. That just seems crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I put out tons of content last year. Those first 3 months of the pandemic really allowed me to like sink in into YouTube real good after having started just a month before. And then once I saw people like actually liked engaging with me and were enjoying the content, I was like, all right, well, I'm gonna make a lot more of this. So
yeah,
I think it's like 120-130 videos since
wow.
I started.
Wow.
Man, I wish I had
you're
that
making me look
man.
I've been doing at it for like 5 years and I have like, I don't know, 60 videos or something like that.
Yeah. No, I'm neither good looking nor extremely talented. So I had to just, you know, get in front of people's faces as much as possible until they decided to like me.
I love it. Now, are you like a one man show, or do you have people helping you with the YouTube? Because it's very well done, I will say.
Thank you. Well, yeah, basically one man show. I recently, for my most kind of passion project series that I started called Feasting on Film.
Yes. Oh, I love it. Yeah.
For that, I do have someone follow me around with the camera. One of my homies, Nick, who I pay. You know, it's not no free labor
here.
But besides that, I do everything. Worst and best part, I develop on my own film and I scan on my own film. I just like doing it. And also, you save a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
But if I decide I'm going to make a video for, let's say, Thursday, and I go out shooting today, between now and Thursday, I have to scan and develop all that
film.
Yeah.
and it just becomes a lot of work. So it's a lot of work. Like I enjoy doing it, but like I'd be lying if I said that it was easy, because it definitely isn't.
It is work. And yeah. I think the first batch of videos that I saw of yours was you printing the color prints in your bathroom. Mm-hmm. And like I'm a bathroom print maker as well. I haven't been since I moved back home, but like I love that. And I love people that share that as well, because I think a lot of people don't do that stuff because they think it's not possible to do from your home, you know? And then I mean, I've only ever messed with the black and white at home, and then you're doing, you know, colored stuff, and I'm just like, dude's got it going on. Like, I love this.
No, you're totally right.
Yeah. Yeah. What started that whole thing?
Yeah, no, I went to the darkroom once, like in like February, and I actually live across the street from a really popular darkroom here in London.
Oh, wow.
It's called Photo Fusion, and they share a space with a store called Parallax. So a really good film photography community.
I've heard of that store.
Across the street from me. So I went to Photo Fusion once. I did some black and white printing just because I was seeing all this stuff on YouTube, and I was like, I got to get my hands on this. Then pandemic hits, and I was like, all right, well, I can't go to the darkroom, which would be the perfect thing to do, like, you know, during the lockdown. So I started just going online and trying to see how hard is it for me to do this at home. And I think what you said earlier is the important thing. Like, a lot of people don't try it because they think it's really difficult.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really is not difficult. I mean that in a 360 point of view. Like, the actual printing itself, to get started, doesn't have to be difficult. You know, you're not going to be Ansel Adams overnight. But the point is, you can get stuff done. And then equipment-wise, all this stuff exists. Literally all of it exists in people's homes. People buy it, people get excited, and people stop doing it and they want to sell it. Older people who've had this stuff for 30 years are trying to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of stuff out there. So you can just jump on that. And you know, with $100, if you search long and hard enough, you can literally get everything you need for black and white.
Wow. Like, that's crazy.
All of it. And then the other thing was, like, I was doing a lot of research, especially for color, because I was like, how the hell does this work? And I'm not going to lie to you, the internet was not the best for that, because all these forums, everybody's like, oh, if you can't control temperature, your prints aren't going to work and you shouldn't even bother doing it. Printing at home is not like a light activity. You really got to do this way, blah, blah, blah. And it's just not how I operate. I think that's why I like film photography.
Yeah.
Because I like messing around, and I like just kind of going with the flow. You know, there's basic principles, but then kind of experimenting with them from that initial kind of starting point. And that's exactly what I do with color. And I was shocked the first time I tried to print. I got an image immediately. It was blue, but the point is, I got an image.
Yeah,
and I
was
like,
okay.
Something happened, and you know, all I have to do is figure out how to not get it to be blue. And then, you know, an hour later, after sweating a lot in the bathroom, here I am with a print that looks like what it's supposed to look like. And I was like, holy shit, we're in business.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so cool. I love that. And it's so true, especially with finding gear and stuff like that. I mean, I can't tell you how many things were just given to me, you know, like darkroom trays and all, you know, and enlarger, just like, it's out there. You just gotta, I'm sure it's getting a little harder to find, because I mean, this film photography thing is crazy right now. Like, years ago, like a couple years ago, it was like, man, it's really blown up. But now it's like, boom, which is, I mean, blessed.
Isn't that crazy how we thought that?
Yeah,
like 5-6 years ago, we're like, wow, it's like, and now we're like, it's like a whole nother level. All the kiddos are doing it now. Yeah. And
it's funny.
Crazy.
I don't even know about that. Like 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
Literally, it was irrelevant to me. Wow. I did a lot of photography. I started doing photography maybe, I don't know, 9-10 years ago, but it was all digital.
Yeah.
And literally, like, not a peep about film photography for a good 5-6 years.
Yeah.
Like I knew it existed because I saw it when I was a kid, but when I was doing photography, there was not one random thought in my head of being like, oh, should I mess around with this film stuff? Like, no, nothing whatsoever. And then maybe 4.5 years ago or so, I randomly realized that the old Canon EF cameras from like the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, I noticed that all my digital lenses worked just fine on those cameras. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. And maybe, I don't know if I was bored or what it was, but I went on eBay, I found a EOS 650, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to buy this and see what happens. And I bought it, and I was like, okay, the lenses obviously work, autofocus. You know, let me go buy some film. I didn't know what I was doing so much that I literally was buying slide film.
Yeah.
I went into the store, and I was like, give me that one. I was paying like $7 for like Velvia or something.
Wow.
Which is crazy. I don't shoot slide film now.
I literally
don't shoot slide film now just because I'm just like, I can't be bothered. Right. It's too strict, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Yeah.
And back then I started with slide film because I had no idea what I was doing.
That's great.
I love the stories like that. Because mine was sort of similar. I learned on film, then switched to digital. And it was digital, everybody, all the time. Everybody was getting rid of their film stuff. And a friend of mine was just like, you should get a film camera. And I was like, okay. Like, I don't know why. And then now it's like, you know, we're obsessed. It's like like that one like bug bite or whatever. And like your whole world has changed, you know? Like, it's crazy how it could have not happened, you know?
Oh, wow. 100%. It definitely could have not happened. I still don't understand how I went from like that first camera to like the 20 that I have now. That first camera was my only film camera for probably like 2 years.
Oh,
which is crazy.
That. Yeah.
And then from 2 years till now, it just like, as I jumped right off the cliff.
Boom. I feel like that's how it is with film photography. It's like, we're all in. We're all in. And we'll learn everything. Large format, we'll do, you know, like all every last thing that we want to try and do. And I just think that's the best part of it all, you know?
You know what part of me though, like I have a couple friends who have been dabbling with digital. Like now it's almost like a backlash.
Yeah.
I think that's the word I'm looking for. But yeah, it's almost like they're messing with digital now almost as a backlash. But it's not, you know, not like a Sony A7 IV or something. Yeah. It's like maybe a Fuji X100V or an old digital Leica. You know, it's still, I think there's something about the way you use the cameras and kind of the pedigree behind the brand that makes people like this whole thing, whether it's digital or film, which is funny because Sony and Canon, well, I don't know about Sony, but Canon has a ton of old film cameras, but the digital ones, like, I could not be any less interested. I use it for my videos, but that's
it. Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy because I was just on set and I have a mirrorless Canon R system.
Yeah, I have the same one.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't even realize how much I'm shooting. Especially when you take the shutter sound out of the equation,
it's just crazy.
I mean, the viewfinder is different because it's digital, and then you're not hearing the sound. So sometimes I'm like, I don't know, and then I turn over the photos. They're like, wow, you shot a lot. I'm like, sorry.
No, I get that.
But you know, with you know, obviously film, it's like you're making a choice for each frame, which is like obviously the beautiful, most rewarding part of it all. But yeah, it's weird with the digital stuff sometimes.
Yeah, at my wedding party this weekend, I had two separate photographers. Got two completely separate events, and they're all shooting digital, so they shot. Like I was being photographed, and I could just hear the click 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 click, like rapid fire, and I'm like, this is kind of weird because I'm not used to the sound anymore, you know?
Right,
and then. So obviously I brought my own film cameras because I was like, I have to take some photos.
Yeah, so around your neck, you had a little point and shoot. I loved it.
Yeah, I had the point and shoot. I shot two rolls on the point and shoot, which felt like a lot. But it was shot. It was rolls of 24. So it was 50 photos. It wasn't even that much.
Yeah.
And then before the party, we did a little portrait shoot outside. And I rented a Pentax X7 from some local dude in Brooklyn because I wanted to bring mine, but that thing's too heavy. So I was like, no, I'm not bringing it. But I shot one roll on that and I literally just developed that a couple hours ago. And, you know, I'm very happy with that one roll of 10 photos.
Yeah. I feel like that's like the same thing with me. I shot one. I didn't even know if I finished the roll at the wedding because I just wanted like cute mirror selfies of my husband and I. And like I was like, babe, we got to come here. Like come to our bedroom real quick. Like I just want to take like five photos. But like those are the ones that, I mean, we have all of our other photos in a frame too, but I'm proud of like those photos that are in the frame because like I made, that was like an intentional thing that I did, you know?
Exactly.
So yeah, you'll treasure those ones more probably.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And I can't print the digital ones. Well, obviously I can, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not the way you want to do it.
No, I can't spend hours sweating in the bathroom with the digital ones. It just doesn't work that way.
Man, it's funny because I bought, it's like an old Nikon point and shoot at an antique mall recently. And it's big and clunky and ugly, and I think it's like 6 megapixels or something. And I've been having so much fun shooting that. It makes me feel like I'm shooting film, even though it is. And it only takes the biggest card you can put it in. It's like 2 gigs or something like that.
Okay.
I mean, that's still like 1,000 photos, but like you still like, I don't know. It's just been fun because I'm just so I don't own a single digital camera anymore. I've got rid of all of them, even my little point and shoot that I was using just strictly for video. And just to have that thing again where I don't have to develop the film right away, and because I've really been slacking on developing. It's just, I don't know. It's fun. And I feel like I wouldn't be in that mind state if I wasn't like an avid film.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. I think being able to take some of the charm of the analog process, but still have the convenience of not paying for developing and not that. I respect that. And I think that, I think it makes sense like why that feeling makes some people want to play with digital a little bit. But like I said earlier, you know, it's not going to be the latest and greatest $3,000 camera.
Yeah.
It'll be something significantly pared down, or something that just operates the way a film camera does, but just gives you digital files. So
yeah, there's that Fuji, is it Pro?
There's a bunch of them.
The Fuji Pro 3. I'm gonna mess it all up. Sorry, everybody, but that one like kind of feels like a rangefinder. So I feel if anything, Timothy, that would be like be the digital camera for you, because it's like really feels good in your hands.
Or that Leica has that one too, isn't it? Like a 10 something 10D or something that doesn't have
M10R,
a back.
I think. Yeah.
It doesn't have a screen on the back.
Oh,
like
I see what you mean.
I would love that one too. I mean, I'd take anything Leica, you know.
Yeah, same. So, Ribsy, I want to talk to you about your film.
Sure.
Yeah.
I do want to say that I love the mindset behind making it, you know, more environmentally friendly and making sure you got all the packaging and stuff. But take us through how that all came to be.
Sure. I think just kind of talking motivation wise, I don't know. I felt like I had this, or not had, but still have this great community that was always growing, and I'm interacting with people and all that stuff. And I was curious, like challenge myself, what else could I do that I'm not already doing? You know, we had a podcast, a YouTube channel, doing all this stuff on Instagram, meeting people, like, you know, what else could I do to just, you know, leave my mark on this whole thing? And I thought creating a film would be a fantastic way to kind of add to this whole package. And to be honest with you, the product that I created and put out to market is not my ultimate goal. I think for me, that was more of a like test case to see, could I actually sell something that people would want to buy? And like, is there branding behind it? How, you know, how did this all work? And now that worked, because I mean, I sold out a film in 3 weeks. It was in an instant.
That's awesome.
And I didn't have like 500 roles. Like we had a couple thousand roles and it was just gone. So I think for me, it was more about kind of proving a bit of a test case and then letting myself know that there actually is more that I could achieve here. And obviously, you know, one of the clear themes here was the trying to move in a more environmentally conscious way. You know, I haven't reinvented the wheel. There's nothing, you know, I haven't changed the world either. But all I do know is that pounds of plastic were not thrown in the garbage because of me. And that alone, like that was for me, if I was going to do a step one, that was step one.
Right.
And plastic is just not a great thing. So I think that's pretty self-explanatory. But yeah, once this idea got in my head, I kind of got obsessed with it and I was like, let's get this done. And it was interesting because I've never really built a business in the past, but I've always been entrepreneurial in a lot of ways, which I think is why YouTube, like I gravitate towards YouTube because of the fact that it kind of is like running a little mini business.
Totally.
I'm in full control. I do whatever I want. And, you know, putting out a film product was this same exact thing. So, of course, you know, we have to find someone to make film. And, you know, there's not that many people making film nowadays.
Right.
So the options were less. But I think we were able to find a really good kind of initial starting point, good connection. And then packaging wise, that was completely custom. I didn't invent that either, obviously. Street Candy, for example, I think it was the first that I ever saw using that kind of packaging. And to me, once I saw that, I was like, this is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Right.
So shout out to them for you know, opening their doors and talking to me about that. But then from there, you know, designing, ordering, putting up money, a lot of money was spent. A lot of money was made, but a lot of money was spent.
Right.
And ultimately, funny enough, the most labor-intensive part of the process was taking a roll of film and putting it into the recycled container.
Yeah.
That was done one by one.
In your video was like, man.
I literally, me and my business partner, one by one. And we had help from his girlfriend too. Shout out to her. But yeah, that was kind of, it was actually almost therapeutic because it was the most labor intensive. That took probably 8 hours, 8 to 10 hours across 2 days to do.
Wow.
But literally, as corny as it sounds, like, you know, I was touching basically every single roll of film.
That's amazing.
The stuff that people bought, like, it didn't just come from some, you know, distribution warehouse or whatever. Like, that was handled by me and my team. So it's not always going to be that way, let's say, assuming we scale massive. Of course not. But at least for that initial round, like, I'll always have the memory of putting this together and then putting it out there in the world. And I'll admit to you, I was a bit worried about how this was going to be received. You know, I don't think anybody in kind of my shoes had done something like that before. And yeah, you know, it's the internet. The internet could be a very beautiful place and a very cruel place. But yeah, the reception was great. I think people kind of understood the energy and the motivation behind it. And like I said, this is just the beginning. The product that we put out is a super V1. And I've got some more like aggressive, more intentional plans to really try to create something brand spanking new. I won't say more than that, but
you know, I love it.
That's I'm putting that out into the world, let's say.
I was just gonna say, it's like, when you say it's sold out so quickly, it's just like, you know, a testament to the community that we all love so much that, like, they're here for it, you know. It's the best.
They really are. No, I think that the energy behind the film community is great. Like everything in this world, there's good and bad to it, but I feel like I can genuinely say that there's way more good than there is bad. And this is part of the reason why I decide, not even decided, this is part of the reason why I naturally, like, just put out so much content and started interacting with people, because it just motivated me. People were all up in it, and I was like, wow, it's almost like this vicious cycle of, like, the more I put out, the more people gave me good feedback, and it just kept going and going and going. And I don't know, if everyone stops being cool, then maybe I'll give up, but I don't think that's going to happen.
No, not in this community. Definitely not.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful film too. I'm glad that it sold out as fast as it did, but I'm kind of bummed that I didn't get a chance to shoot it.
I know, I didn't get any.
It's all good. Yeah, like your video, just seeing the examples that you posted of it, like I'm diehard black and white, and seeing that, I was like, man, that is so pretty. Like, I love that hard contrast and
just a
good looking film.
Yeah, no, we've got, there's already more on order. For sure. Hopefully by the holiday season this year, we're ready to start selling again, assuming nothing crazy happens with supply chains and shipping and all that stuff. But yeah, no, I think I agree with you. I think the look, like I said, I didn't have that many options, but the little options that I had, I kind of was like, oh, I really like this particular style. And I shoot a good amount of black and white. And I think my favorite black and white to shoot is on the streets. Just kind of like, you know, you encounter the world and you react to it and make images. So that particular film, I think, really adds a lot to the kind of the formula without you having to do too much. And for me, there's a lot of people who have like their go-to stock and their go-to developer and their go-to like process for developing. Mm-hmm. Totally. I'm not like that at all. So for me, I kind of just rely on whatever happens that day, whatever the film gives me. If I over underexpose accidentally, like, I'll take it all. The agency for me is in picking the film and shooting it and then using whatever random developer and whatever amount of time I decided to use that day. I'm going to say control freak, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but I guess I'm not a perfectionist. Let's put it that way. I kind of enjoy a little bit of recklessness when it comes to, you know, just analog photography in general.
Dude, I totally relate to that. Yeah,
totally. And I noticed that in like one of your videos. You're like, maybe this came out, maybe it didn't. It'll be cool. It'll be fine. I was like, I like that.
Yeah. No,
We overthink it all the time, you know? I just love that you were just like firing off the hip, you know?
No, it's cool. I think, you know, I think part of what's great about analog photography is that there is stuff you need to do with your hands and with your mind and, you know, with equipment and tools and formulas. So you can choose to be as thorough as you want. And all the answers are right. There is no wrong answer at the end of the day. And I honestly do believe that. I know that sounds kind of like cheesy sometimes, but I truly believe it. And it's funny, when I was in New York, I met up with Lena Bessanova, who many of you might know.
Love her.
She's fantastic. She inspired me a lot, especially when I was starting out. And obviously, it's still to this day. But she happened to be in town when I was in town. I was like, hey, we got to meet up. And we were hanging out with her and her husband, who's who runs ADOX, the big film company.
I didn't know that. Dang, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah. So ultimately, we're talking about the Scala reversal film process kit that they have. Uh-huh. And it's funny, I made a video about it, and clearly I messed something up, because when I pulled the film out, the edges of my film where the film borders are in 35 millimeter, where the emotion was just gone. Like I completely wiped it and scratched it off. But the images themselves in the middle were still there, although maybe the borders were a little bit like, you know, raggedy. And I was like, so clearly I messed something up, but I still loved how it came out. Yeah, it looked really cool. Yeah. And on Instagram, everybody's like, holy shit, that looks dope, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then I talked to her and she's like, oh my God, you messed something up. I didn't know where you messed up. And I'm like, listen, both sides of the equation are all right. I love that she's very tactical and really loves doing things, you know, how she does it, especially with an eye towards like really clean, you know, finalized products. I think I'm on the other side of that. For me, it's all about, you know, how satisfied I feel in that moment. And also, again, another cheesy thing, but like how much fun I had doing it.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to lie, like messing things up sometimes is just fun.
It's dude, it's like one of my favorite things of the whole. Like I wouldn't have gotten some of my favorite shots if I wouldn't have messed some things up. And we do a developing night for our Patreon, and you know, we with the groups of people where, you know, everybody's got their own little way of doing things when we're, and it's like, ooh, I always have this set to this so the temperature never sways. I'm like, dude, I don't mess. I don't care. Like, I want it to look messed up. You know, I'm not looking to make it all crappy, but if it comes out crappy, I'm like, in the back of my head, I'm like, heck yeah, this is awesome.
No,
like,
and that lends itself well to a lot of specific styles of photography.
Because I
feel like street photography, part of the charm of it sometimes, in my case, in my photos, is like the extra kind of factor that this like imperfect process adds to it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not great for other things. I don't use that as an excuse to say, oh, it's art. That's one of the memes out now right now where it's like, I won't quote it incorrectly, but ultimately like a lot of the imperfection, like a lot like could be mistaken as like art, you know? It's like, oh no, it's supposed to be.
That's,
you know,
my
that
style.
Exactly. Yeah. you know, I don't want to solely rely on that. I'm not trying to like use that as my foundation, but my style is to not really care that much. And that's consistent.
Yeah.
It's always been there.
And I love that you posted it too, regardless.
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking about our develop and hang night. Do you remember, Timothy, I forgot to put the post to the reel. Uh-huh. And I was like developing. I looked in and was like, I could see the film.
Oh, no.
And there was, of course, like a bunch of people on this Zoom, and I was like so embarrassed. I was like, oh, well. And like the whole role wasn't ruined, thankfully. And the ones that came out were like super moody. Like I did it on purpose.
Yep.
And, so it was art, okay?
It is what it is.
Yeah.
And you know what? Like, compare that to digital. What can you do in digital that's going to make your photos look imperfect?
Exactly.
You literally have to like go out of your way to mess them up intentionally with Photoshop and whatever the hell else.
Yep.
You can't accidentally ruin an image.
Right. Yep.
You know, and I'm sure there are some random things that could happen, but you know, it's just not the same.
It's not. Yeah.
It's not like it at all.
You can't do digital film soup.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I mean, you can try. I don't know if your camera's going to survive.
Yeah. Digital light leaks.
Yep. Oh,
open the back of the film, the digital camera.
The recent thing I learned, and going back to this, you know, film shooter shooting digital, I think one of the first Leica digital cameras was like, the sensor was made by Kodak or something.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Theoretically, it's supposed to emulate, I don't know if it's Portra or some other emulsion, but I thought that was really interesting because I didn't know that until like a couple months ago. And I was like, oh, that kind of makes sense. But at the same time, to me, it sounds like maybe just like a convenient story to tell.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. It's always been so tough for me to convert digital files. I look back at my digital stuff from like 2011 and 2012 and stuff, and I'm like, I thought that looked like film, you know, like I thought I was making it look like film, and it was just absolute way over processed trash. And I'm like, thank goodness I took a step over to this side, because that was not, you know, I was really trying to strive for that film look, and it is really hard. You know, there are people that do it really well. Like I could never tell the difference between their shot and a film shot, you know, or a digital shot and a film shot. And I mean, technology is just crazy, but again, I think I said it a couple episodes ago or whatever, where I tried taking my Sony mirrorless camera and I was like, for 1 week, I'm just going to try to use this and see if I can actually do it. And I couldn't come up with anything that I liked, and even barely editing it, it still looked over edited. So I just, it's just not for me, unfortunately.
It's a talent in itself, I feel like, to be able to edit digital images to where, I mean, not that they, necessarily look exactly like film, but they just look pleasant. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Yeah. Because
you know how out of the camera they don't. To me, they're just very like stark to like, you know, make them look whatever look that photographer is going for. I think that in itself is like a whole nother skill set that I just don't have.
Yeah. Editing. I think one of the things that makes me like film a lot is that I tend to do a lot less editing.
Right.
Not because I'm like categorically against it or anything like that, but I invested so much time in the other part of the process that by the end of it, I'm kind of exhausted where I just want to get
exactly.
a stand.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, there's the whole idea of like, you know, unedited film doesn't exist. Like it just, yeah, I don't believe in that, but I do, there is something calming and kind of like soothing for me to know that, okay, I did all these steps. I scanned it, you know, I cropped it very lightly. I maybe cleaned up some random dust and stuff like that, but I use Negative Lab Pro and I just kind of let the software do what it wants to do. And unless it looks really bad or if there's like an obvious color cast, I tend to just leave it.
Yeah.
And I think for me, there's a bit of closure in like ending there just because to have done all that physical work already to then, you know, spend all this time on the computer for something that doesn't have a fine, like an answer.
Right.
I feel like for me, you know, that's too much. And I get it. If you're doing like, you know, if you let's say you're a professional photographer and you've got a specific look that you're hired for and all that kind of stuff, then potentially there, you know, you really have to like ensure that you've got this consistency. Yeah. But consistency in visual kind of appeal, let's say, is just not a goal of mine in any way at all whatsoever. I think for me, consistency is about and I don't mean like the definition of a consistency. I just mean like how I apply consistency to myself.
Yeah.
It's just more about consistently being out there, creating images, and then, of course, having fun with it and making images that I actually like, because I do think being self-critical is good in to a certain degree. So, you know, if I feel like I'm on a roll and doing things that I'm enjoying and creating images that I like, then I'm like, all right, this is what it's about. But, you know, I like I said earlier, I'm neither extremely talented nor good looking, so my sphere is much smaller, and I guess I can get away with, you know, my definition of consistency.
No, it works, man. I love that. I can relate to that so much, and I'm sure people listening are like, man, totally.
And plus, like, it's good to like not be tormented by that, because I feel
of
like,
of course,
I get a little tormented by that because I feel like I want my work to have a specific style, so like I won't post something that doesn't really align with that, you know?
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You know, like Instagram just like lives rent free in photographers' minds. That's me.
100%.
Like if it doesn't make sense. Like it should be all together, then I'm like, I'm all bothered.
Yeah. I treat my YouTube and Instagram almost like a diary.
Yeah.
Where I never had a diary growing up. I never did that. But I feel like I assume that when people use diaries and write in them in a journal, whatever, you know, there's no aim. You know, you kind of evolve as you grow and get older and blah blah blah. So I treat Instagram and YouTube like that. I think there's more value in like talking up. So you know what? Captions on Instagram, I think, are highly underrated. And I don't mean like, you know, you put a Drake lyric behind your image. I mean more like you actually, you know, talk about whatever the hell was involved in this whole.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty. That means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Definitely, yeah.
And that's what I feel like where I give the most value on Instagram is whether I pose a question and kind of give my take on it or I describe what happened or whatever. I feel like that being consistent and talking through that is probably more effective than just having like a particular style on Instagram. And again, this is me. I think the role that I play is of like your average photographer, not like, you know, anything else other than that. So yeah, I don't know. I feel you totally about like the pressure. But once I decide to kind of just treat this as a day by day journal diary kind of thing, that pressure is almost gone. And for me, like if I'm getting people commenting because of whatever I said, and responding to me because of what I said, that's almost better than when people are like, oh, cool image, or like, I love the picture, whatever.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. It's given me a bit of peace, let's say, thinking about it that way.
I love that. I wish I was to get on a personal level. I recently started therapy in the last like 3 months. I've been doing some, because it's time, you know, sometimes you just need to take some time for yourself. I was already kind of on an Instagram hiatus. Like I had planned this big comeback, you know, after Christmas. I was like, I'm going to get back on it. I'm really going to go for it. And then just my therapist, that just sounds so crazy. My therapist, she was like, if it really brings you, I was like, it brings me so much joy. You don't understand. I love looking at people's work and I love the community aspect. And I really only have that on Instagram. Like I'm an Instagram person. There's either like Twitter people and Instagram. And like, I go on Twitter to see what the news is, basically. And Instagram was like my see what my friends are doing type thing. And it was just not working for me. And it was really creating a lot of stress and anxiety around my everyday. So she was like, disconnect, log out of your Instagram. And I'm like, well, half my thing is my podcast on Instagram. Literally I'm only logged in to the podcast on Instagram now. Like my account is just kind of like off in the void. And I'll tell you, the relief of that is insane. Like instead of getting, I used to wake up, because I mean, if you have an iPhone, you know, you get your 17 messages from Instagram smashed into one little folder and it's all like crazy comments, suggestions and all that stuff. And it was just too much with like the political stuff, the COVID stuff. And and it just, I can't tell you though, it's a blessing, but I hear you guys talk about it and it's like, I miss it so much, but I don't know if I'm there yet. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah. There's different ways. I'm obviously not a therapist, but what I would think is like what you liked about Instagram seems to me like just being able to catch up with people and kind of see their work. Maybe there's other ways to try to get some of that.
I mean, it was Flickr back in the day, really.
You know,
and there was no, it wasn't really like a social media aspect of it. It was just people sharing their work and the groups and the conversations and stuff like that. Flickr needs to make a comeback, everybody. Let's get back on Flickr.
There's definitely an opportunity there. I mean, Instagram has basically told all the photographers to fuck off.
Seriously, so there's that too.
I'm sure there's a programmer in the community somewhere and a bright mind who can come together and create something new and, you know, try to hit the big gaps that the photographers have currently. Because, I love scrolling through and being able to catch up with what people are doing. But at the same time, they're just not making it easy.
Right.
Yeah.
And all this other stuff is mixed into there that has nothing to do with photography. So either you clean up your Instagram account and unfollow everything. And even then you can't, because, you know, we're humans. So the same photographer has thoughts about whatever the hell's happening in the world.
Right.
New app, I think, is the answer. Yeah. Someone needs to do it.
Well, I'll tell you too. What really has been helping for me is I'm a big supporter of buying people's work when they put it out, you know, like I always try to get people's zines or if a new book's coming out or something. So I would buy that stuff like during my heavy like Instagram phases of just being on there. Like I never took the time to read the books that I wanted to read about the photographer biographies. And I have so many zines and photo books that I've, you know, just skimmed through it when I got it and then just put it on the shelf. And lately I've just really been like digesting some stuff, and I've learned so much from that you don't learn the cohesive body of work on Instagram. You see the one picture, and it, of course, it's probably one of your buddies or somebody you look up to, so you're gonna like it. Great shot, dude, like you know, and then that's it. When you really look at like a cohesive body of work, like a book, and see the time, and like some of those projects are, this was my 25 years in the, you know, Sudan doing and it's like, oh my god, that would be amazing. And it's really like honed in like some solid projects that I want to do in the future and made me take a look at, I'm a shooter, you know, I'll shoot a mailbox that looks cool. Like I don't care, you know what I mean? And I really want to try to work on doing stuff that's meaningful. Chris, you said it not that long ago, I think it was on Twitter, like I want to do meaningful work, that something like that. And I was like, hell yeah, like I feel that too. And film is not cheap, so I need to stop shooting it like a digital camera too and really kind of hone in on something special and then get the release that you know Yeah.
Plus, I think makes it, it's all like obviously that much more meaningful. I mean, any like physical thing that we, whether it's a Polaroid or we make a print or, you know, anything that we can hold in our hands really takes it to the next level. Mm. And especially if you're being so intentional about, you know, you're not going to share it on said social media thing, but you're going to have it exclusively for a book. It just makes it even more like this is never before seen.
Yeah.
Which I really, now that I think about it, Timothy, I really think that's that should be your next project.
I think it is. I'm on my way.
Yeah.
I do miss it though, you know, like, cause you get, I mean, it's a proven fact. You get like a euphoric rush from sharing work and getting applause and pats on the back and shares. And I would be like, if this photo doesn't get 100 hearts, I'm deleting it. Like, it just wasn't worth posting it. And like, I don't know how to rid myself of that. Cause I know even now if I would post a photo and it didn't do 100, which is nothing, you know what I mean? Compared to the big scheme of like everybody's... Right. You know, 20,000 likes on stuff. It's like, but I shouldn't even be doing that. Cause like you said, you know, it's like a journal and a diary. Like that's what I always used my Instagram for, was kind of like a quasi like portfolio journal, this and that. And it,
but think about like before all that stuff, before Instagram, before Flickr. Yeah. When I first started shooting, I was 17. And like those endorphins or dopamine or whatever I got was from walking upstairs from my darkroom and being like, look, I made this. Yeah. Like, and people being like, that's crazy. That's so cool. Like, it exists outside of the instant gratification of all that. So you just have to kind of like figure out and navigate where you're going to. I think like gallery shows, books, like all that stuff is really like where the secret lies there, I think.
To get
out of your head.
Definitely.
Printing is definitely one of those things, because when you print, for the most part, you're like, unless you scan it and then upload it to Instagram, like no one's going to see this on like some digital mass scale like platform.
Yeah.
So that becomes irrelevant. Like how many likes you get on your print, that literally doesn't exist.
Exactly.
What becomes relevant is you holding it and looking at it and be like, damn, I like that.
Right.
Yeah. And then you showing it to your friends or your loved ones or whoever, and then being like, damn, I like that. That is completely different from what you get on Instagram. So I think maybe for you and for others that are feeling the same way, like there's different ways to interact with your photography, whether it's a book, you can make digital prints of your, you know, analog photos. Or of course you can do darkroom prints. All of that stuff adds all this extra value that literally has nothing to do with Instagram, like at all. There's no likes. There's no like. And even if everybody was doing it, you know, you can't compare yourself to the next person, because what are you going to compare it to?
Right. Yeah.
Nothing. It doesn't exist. So, yeah, I think and that's more of the beauty of film photography, is that you can really interact with your images in a lot of ways that doesn't that's have so to true. Do with Instagram. Whereas with digital, of course, you can still print them, but it's kind of your only option.
Yeah.
You know, you can start shooting slide film, for example, and project it on a slide projector. Like, there's definitely different things. You can switch to instant film, which really takes things to a different place.
Totally. I'm obsessed with instant film.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. I just got the Lamography Graflock back.
Yeah, saw that video. It's so good.
It is a lot of fun to use. And there's a challenge there, because the film itself is like, you can't. My usual style doesn't really work that well with the Instax, so it forces me to be a bit more attentive. But even then, the beauty of like getting what you get is still like really cool. So, yeah, I think that's one of the answers. I don't have all the answers, but one answer is
great. I love it.
Just try to do things that you can interact with in ways that do not involve Instagram.
Totally.
There's all kinds of photography related things you can do, and I don't know. I think that might be why I feel pretty good generally, because I can balance those things out. YouTube is a nice one, because obviously there's video views and likes and whatever, but I don't know. It almost doesn't hit the same way as Instagram. Instagram feels almost more like reachable. Like it almost feels like it's more in your... I mean, it literally is in the palm of your hands. But right. When you post something, it's almost like you're expecting, like, of course, you know, I'm going to get this number of likes or whatever. Whereas on YouTube, like, I don't know, it just feels almost more irrelevant. And maybe that's just for me. I don't know. But I put it out there, and once it's out there, it's out there. And
that's it.
You know, that's it. Like, whatever. You're not going to put all that work into the video and then delete it afterwards. Like,
you're right. Yeah. You're right.
Speaking of zines and books, Ribsy, do you have any plans for something like that?
I definitely don't have any plans. You know, I've definitely had random thoughts, because I feel like everyone has a thought at one point or another. I don't know. It's definitely not something I'm like meaningfully interested in. Definitely not right now. But I think it's a cool idea. And if I were to do it, I feel like I'd want to do it well.
Yeah.
What that means, I have no idea what that means.
Yeah.
But I, you know, so a lot of people focus on doing something that's meaningful or something that's specific to a topic or, you know, things that are a bit more organized. And I just, my photography just isn't that way. Like I have 20 different cameras and I honestly, I use most of them, you know, that changes what kind of images you create.
Totally. Yep.
I don't have a specific film stock that I'm like obsessed with. So I'm always messing around. And then I make content online, which really compels me to like think outside the box and like try to hit a lot of different places. So to focus on one thing and do that for a long time before putting a work together, that would take a lot of time away from the other stuff, which definitely enjoying. Like I don't, there's no void that I need to fill. There is part of me does think that like, oh, like you're not a real photographer or a serious one unless you, you know, create this project or something. And, you know, that's not a healthy thought.
No.
Especially in this modern day and age. Like, what does it mean to be a legit photographer? Like that is just different from what it meant, you know, 15 years ago to what it meant 50 years ago. Like the internet matters and, you know, what you put out there is more than just the actual images. Some people hate that. Some people hate the fact that like you can get, well, you can become well known without creating amazing work, whatever that means. And then other people hate the old guard and think, oh, you know, the old guard is too closed off and restricted. It's this weird tension. And I'm curious like how that'll evolve because it kind of just sways back and forth depending on, you know, the time of the year or something. I don't know.
Right.
But it is a weird tension that like it's not hurting me. It's not causing me anxiety or anything, but it's definitely something that I think about from time to time. Like which one matters more? Do they even matter? Can they both coexist? Is one just as valuable as the other? Like I don't know the answer, but I haven't discounted one.
I think that's important though. Like the new generation of, I don't want to call them YouTube photographers, but you know, content people in photography. And I think that's such a vital thing right now. And it will come down the line too of just to show 20 years from now, if those videos are still, well, I'm sure there will be, there'll be like a Wayback Machine that we can all watch this stuff later in time. But
yeah.
It's, I wouldn't have got, and how many people wouldn't, or like have gotten into this because of people that make content on YouTube about this? And
yeah.
And what you said though, too, it is so tough to juggle like your personal work and be a content creator on film photography because it's just really tough. You're like, I want to show this camera, but the camera might not have anything to do with the project that you're working on, but you got to do, and it's a process. You got to develop the film. You got to scan the film. Yeah. You got to, you know, it's tough to put, you know, that's kind of what made me kind of chill out on doing it for a while. Cause I really wanted to get back to me, you know? And
But I think the other thing is like, as a photographer, like you can do a lot of different things. And like maybe historically, a lot of the great photographers created amazing work. But then, you know, what value did they give to the community other than their work? They don't have to. I'm not saying like you need that to be great. But in this day and age, there's this whole kind of complete other direction you can come from where the value you give is how you get your access. It's how you start to build up, you know, your name and whatever. And then maybe you choose to one day pause that and then use that attention for something specific. But like, it's not even about who's great and how do you become great. It's just about like, who's actually doing stuff. And you could be doing stuff as someone who doesn't talk to anybody and just creates amazing work and stays quiet. Or you can be doing stuff as someone who's constantly talking to people and teaching and inspiring and, you know, all that stuff. There's a lot to it. And maybe I'm saying this because I'm on one side of that coin. But yeah, I have zero ambitions or intentions or even like have the, I think I have the humility to not even think that like there's any consideration of me being great in any way. That's not at all what I'm saying. But I don't appreciate when like the foot that some people leave with is being like, oh, look at these, you know, internet photographers. Like, that's not even what it's about.
Not at all.
Right.
You know, exactly.
We'll be right back with listener question for Ribsy right after this message from our sponsor.
Support for Analog Talk comes from Polaroid. Use the promo code ANALOGTALK10 on your first purchase on film at Polaroid.com.
Real quick, just wanted to let you guys know that you can hang out with Chris and I on our Develop and Hang nights by joining our Patreon. It is a $5 tier. Once a month, we develop some film, we have some fun, we laugh, we, you know, we share secrets, we share tips and tricks. It's just a good time. It's a fun time to hang out. And like I've said before, Patreon is the best way to help support the show. If that sounds like something you're interested in, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Thanks, guys. All right, guys, this is part of the show where we break off and take a question from one of our listeners. And this week's question comes from Naeem Douglas, and they want to know, who is your favorite photographer? And then there's the, why is it Naeem Douglas? But yeah, who's your favorite photographer?
No.
Yeah.
That's dope. No, shout out to Naeem. I'm definitely going to put him on right now. Basically, he's one of the homies from New York. I actually chilled with him a couple times when I was back in the city last week. And I think one of the great things that I've learned from watching him do his thing, he does a lot of street portraits, and it's a lot of kind of interactive portraits, meaning he'll go up to somebody and say, hey, you know, I love what you're wearing, and the light is really nice where you're standing. Can I get a photo? The amazing thing is kind of twofold. One is he has a career in journalism. Talking to strangers in the streets was literally his job.
Oh, easy.
For worse reasons, you know. Someone gets murdered, he has to go to the scene of the crime and talk to people who definitely don't want to talk to him and definitely not on TV.
Right.
But he got it done. So I guess, you know, some of that experience lends itself to walking up to strangers that have nothing to do with a murder in the street and asking them for their portrait. And I think the other thing that's interesting is when he does get a rejection, the way he takes it in stride and just keeps it moving, like it's almost not even something to commend, honestly, because it just has zero effect on him.
And it really, like we were saying, it shouldn't. It should just be like, okay, cool, never mind. Like, thanks anyway. But a lot of us, because I don't know, I'm shy. So if somebody tells me no, I'm like, well, I just guess I'll go home.
Yeah.
I'm just going to be done for today.
My tail will be between my legs.
Yeah. But I like love that. And that's like kind of like words to live by, you know?
No, it really is. And like ultimately that no is completely meaningless. Like all you've done is ask someone for a photo. That's it.
Plus it has nothing to do with you. Like,
no,
that's, they don't want the picture taken. Move on, you know? Don't take it so personal.
Exactly. I know it's easier said than done, but like, you know, like me personally, I wouldn't say I get like completely fazed by a no, but it still has like at least a soft sting. It doesn't stop me from continuing and doing it again, but I'm not at the point where Naeem is at, where it really just kind of rolls off, you know,
off the top
and you keep it moving. So I commend them for that. That's something that I think we should all aspire to.
For sure.
Absolutely.
So who's your favorite photographer?
You know what? I hate this question because
me too.
I really don't have one. And I think most of it has to do with just like ignorance. And I mean that in like a good way. Like I didn't study photography. I don't know who the greats are. I don't own photo books. I just, you know, it's just not how I've interacted with photography. And I don't think I ever will. And then the other side of that is, I think what I'm more gravitate towards is like kind of like styles and time periods and that kind of thing. And for me, without question, kind of the style, genre, time period that of photography that I love the most is the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
Specifically in the hip hop community. I think that time period, first of all, I lived it. You know, I was alive during it. I experienced it, like not through photography, but like just kind of day to day life. Living in New York City and kind of just, you know, growing up in the US and everything. But then, you know, looking back, I digested all those videos. I digested all those, you know, like images and stuff. And now that I look back on them, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Like they take on a whole new meaning and a whole new life because of, you know, how the images are created, what camera was used, you know, the lighting and the film stock and all that stuff. And that was kind of, I mean, now I'm really speaking out of turn because I don't know these things to be facts. But in my head, that was like the golden age of photography because it wasn't declining.
Yeah.
It wasn't declining yet. Everything was kind of at its height. The technology was still advancing theoretically at that time. And it was kind of the tip of the, not the tip of the iceberg, but like kind of the last round before you know, digital really started to do its thing. So there's something really special about that. It's almost like film photography's most like strong version of itself. In the history, theoretically.
Wow.
And the hip hop aesthetic, when you combine those two kind of facts, it just really does it for me. And I said I don't own photo books. That's kind of a lie. I own two, technically. One of them is Contact High.
I have it too. It's
and like that. That just summarizes it all for me. Yeah, I love it.
Great answer. I like that. I like that aspect of things. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like how you didn't pinpoint it to one specific person. It was era of photographers, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And that era like probably has more no-name working successful photographers than any era. Like all those images were created by a ton of photographers, and you know, like in this version of film photography that we have now, you know, you hear the same names over and over again.
Right.
all those people who made careers out of it probably will never know who they are. You right. might recognize some of their images, but you know, they kind of exist yeah. in anonymity.
That's such a like an interesting thing to think about, especially because like back then, if you were a photographer, it meant that you had a specific set of skills that not everybody yeah. on the street had. So exactly. now we all, it's like in our phone, like it's in our pocket. So like
yeah.
everybody's making work. Like if I'm the photographer on set, somebody will get a shot with their phone. They might use that instead.
Yeah,
you know,
crazy.
Yeah.
What, back then, like you were the guy or girl, like that was
yeah, exactly.
it. And you were hired because I don't know. Not everybody knew how to do photography. It was like really a thing, you know? So yeah, I love looking at that time period too, for sure.
We'll never have that again.
Never.
Or at least not in this.
It's gone.
Not in this era of technology. Right. Maybe another technology will come out where the skill set is so valuable that not everyone can do it. But right now, I mean, there's so much information out there.
Yep.
There's so many great tools.
Right.
And potentially the consumer has also like taken some of the value away. That's the part that I don't want to argue, because that part we can get real yeah. deep. But
right.
like photography theoretically isn't as meaningful in a lot right. of ways as it used to be. And so, you know, it's just very different. But yeah, that's my era.
Okay,
I think about it all the time, and it's good. It's just something we'll never, unless I time travel, we'll never get it back.
Right. I'm gonna pull out the book Contact High after we are done
yeah.
here today.
Just oh so yeah, I yeah, definitely.
Revisit. Man.
All okay. right. So part two, our two-part question, our camera question, and the first part usually is pretty hard for everybody, or sometimes there's people that are like, oh no, this is it. But it's the age-old desert island camera. You can only choose one. It's your ride or die for the rest of your life. What and why?
Sure. If we're on a desert island, which implies no access to like electricity, then it definitely has to be one of my non-battery operated cameras. If we're going 35 millimeter, it'll probably be one of my Canon rangefinders.
Yeah.
The 7 is the one that I have the most love for, but I recently finally started using the P that I bought like yeah. 4 months ago. And you know, I love using the cameras. And honestly, I'm talking about the camera there, but shout out to the lens, because the lens that I have on there is the Jupiter 12, the 35 yeah, millimeter yeah. one, whichever one that is. And like I memorized the lens. Like when you talk about your focus throw and zone focusing and all that, like this one, I memorized it. So
yeah.
that's the one for 35 millimeter. For medium format, it's got to be one of my folding cameras.
Oh, interesting.
My favorite one, right? Well, the one I use the most now is the Agfa Isolette 3. Love it. Great camera. It's beautiful too. But honestly, any folding camera would probably do, as long as there's no batteries.
Definitely. Man, folding cameras are so, they're tough to find.
Just
yeah,
so
they're
underrated.
So underrated, and they're tough to find like really good ones when you're just kind of out thrifting and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
But I think I have a Zeiss folder that is just mm-hmm. sweet. It's awesome. And they're just like, what an awesome design. It's compact. It's just awesome.
Yeah.
It's a perfect blend of design yeah. and beauty. Or aesthetic, whatever the phrase is. But like, I'm no engineer, but that's pretty
yeah,
damn cool.
For sure.
And they look cool
yeah,
as fuck.
Yeah, no, 100%. Man, so part oh,
I was
go
wondering.
Ahead, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was wondering. I wonder if he's gonna say the Canon rangefinder. I feel like that's gonna.
Oh
be
yeah,
one.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah. No, that. I mean, talk about underrated. That's another one. I think
seriously.
I think it'll be less underrated pretty soon.
Yep.
But the good news is there's so many of them
yeah.
out there, especially
yeah.
like the P. Like they made too many copies of that camera, so theoretically prices shouldn't be that insane. We'll see.
Theoretically.
Yeah, they're not that bad.
Yeah.
I got one over last summer when I was going through my massive rangefinder phase, and I think I spent like $230 or something on it, which
oh,
for
yeah, yeah.
a solidly
yeah.
built camera like that, like
yeah.
no
yeah.
brainer.
I always thought they were so pretty. I just never pulled the trigger.
They
on
are.
One.
They're gorgeous.
Yeah.
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 All right. So the second part of the camera question is the white whale camera. Is there anything that you've been lusting after that you just, you know, you haven't had the chance to get your hands on?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we all have, you know, I feel like everyone has kind of some of the similar things in their head. But this one, I feel like is not at the top of everybody's list, but I feel like it should be. For me, it's a medium format camera. It's the, well, I guess there's two names for it. Someone else can probably explain what the deal is, but it's the Fuji GF670/Voigtlander Besa 3. And that camera, at least the Fuji version, it's basically theoretically a modern film
yeah,
camera.
Yeah.
It was, I think they stopped making it in the 2000s, like 2006 or 2004, something around that time. So it's got a lot of bells and whistles, and it's almost like it's, you know what I mentioned earlier about how film photography kind of reached this max potential in the 2000s. I feel like this camera kind of exemplifies that, especially for a folding camera, because it is a folding camera. It's not tiny, but it is a folding camera. You can kind of store it away, you know, pretty easily. It's got bellows. Apparently the lens is just extremely sharp and beautiful and, you know, does all the stuff. And it's an f3.5 lens on the Fuji one, which for medium format is, especially for 6x6, 6x7, which this camera can do both, is really legit. But the best part is it's got the rangefinders coupled. So you just put it up to your face, you know, look through the little viewfinder and you're good to go. That is massive. That's that, like, there's other ones obviously that exist that are older that do a lot of these things, but this is the most modern version of it and I want it. And it, honestly, it's expensive, but it I feel like it almost makes sense why it's expensive compared to a lot of other cameras that are just like, there's too few of them out there and people are just too thirsty for them.
Right.
This just, you know, this just feels like a kind of a, almost like a Leica style, you know, design and like kind of hitting that peak of technological and engineering advancement, but for medium format. So anyways, I'll stop laughing about it, but that's the one. I've never even seen it in person.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't see those out very often.
No.
Yeah.
I think maybe they just feel more delicate than a Leica because of the bellows and all that.
But
yeah, I've never seen it, literally never. And I don't know if I ever will unless I go buy one.
I was going to say, Chris, we did see it at the Padilla. Neil Wainwright,
right.
He had one.
Neil had one.
I think he actually broke it or something too at the end of the week. It, like, had something happen. Neil, I'm sorry if I'm mistaken or even bringing it back up. If you're listening to this, I'm sorry. But I think it's okay now. I forget, but just seeing it though was like, it's another one of those work of arts. It's like, it is like holding like a Leica or, you know, something along those lines. That's just the epitome of photography, you know?
Yeah.
No, and I would use the crap out of that camera.
Like, 100%.
That's the thing. I'm definitely not the kind of person. It's almost like sneaker people and camera people. Like, they buy shoes and cameras just to look at them and to have them.
It's so
true.
You
know what? Like, it's not my money, so whatever. I'm not judging. But when I buy stuff, like, I fully have the intention of using it. And not only would I use that medium for my camera, but it scratches two itches for me. One is I like folding cameras for going hiking and for traveling just because of the portability. So that's obviously there. But then the other side of it is I usually don't use folding cameras, or at least the ones that I have, for anything else, because they're a bit cumbersome, especially for portraits and things like that. They're not ideal, at least not in my head. I have other cameras that I think are better suited. This one has the coupled rangefinder. And it's got that great lens. So it works fantastic for portraits. Again, I've never used it, but in my head, at least right now, the formula's there. So I would take this camera basically everywhere. And I would...
This is like your real white whale here. You're like, this is like...
No, it really is.
You're dreaming about it. Yeah.
I'm going to buy it one day. The beauty of it is I don't think it's been going up in price at all just because like the demand maybe isn't there. It just costs a lot because it costs a lot.
Right.
I think it cost the same price that it costs, you know, when it came out, maybe adjusted for some inflation. But I think that's why it's expensive, because it's always been expensive. So I'm going to get one day. I'm definitely going to get it. But I think I won't get one until I accidentally come across one and get to hold it. And then I'm like, oh, shit. Like, no,
and it's
really
over. Well, both great answers. Yes.
Cool.
Ribsy, this has been great. This is like, you're going to kick off our comeback to our show. So this is beautiful. Where can everybody check out the channel, Instagram, all that stuff?
Of course. Yeah. I think Ribsy is the name on basically everything now. R-I-B-S-Y. So look that up on Instagram, YouTube. And then I do have a podcast, which is attached to the New Classic brand. So if you search New Classic Film Photography Podcast on wherever you do podcasts, it should be there. Just like you, I did take a slight bit of a hiatus just because one man show, and I had a lot to do in the last 2 months. So now that a lot of that stuff is completed, I've got a couple of things in the bank that I'm looking to release. So definitely go check out the podcast. Yeah. I love talking to people. I love just kind of digging into people's heads, and we've got a very wide range of guests, similar to your podcast. So
yeah,
I think there's a lot to appreciate there. There's a lot of new things to discover and kind of just new things to hear and see.
Awesome.
Amazing. Timothy, where are you?
Guys, you can head over to Instagram, even though I said I don't use it anymore. And that's at Timothy Makeups. You see a bunch of my work there, and I have a link tree that links to pretty much everything else that I do on there. But I do have some older YouTube videos, too, that are film photography related. You can just go to the search bar, type in Timothy Makeups. You'll find a whole bunch of my stuff there. Chris, where are you?
I am Chris B. Photo on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We're Analog Talk Pod on Twitter, Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram, and we have a Facebook page and a group, and we also have a Patreon too. Yeah.
Awesome.
Rizzy, my heart is full. Yeah. This is like, we love doing this, and this was a good one. Hell so thank yeah. you, thank you, thank you.
Of course, you got it.
Great.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time. Bye.
All right. First off, we want to thank Rizzy for coming on the show. Long time coming. So glad we finally got to chat with you. We love what you're doing. Your YouTube channel is great. I love that you're doing the film thing. We totally love what you got going on. Such a good time, such a great conversation, and again, it was great getting to meet you. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. For just $1, you can get the show 2 days early. We're also doing our developing hangs. We're going to be doing Patreon-only exclusive stuff. We're actually in the process of revamping Patreon, so keep an eye out for that. Also wanted to throw in there, we're doing our annual holiday 4x6 print exchange. Chris and I, we do it every year. We usually try to get a couple guests that have been on the show to participate, and you know, it's just a way to share our work with the world. So check that out. There'll be links below for that. Feels great to be back. Chris and I are super excited. We took a little bit of a break, and we are pumped to be back. We definitely have a fire lit, and we can't wait to roll out a bunch of new shows with you guys. So we hope you're still shooting and carrying on and having fun and keeping this film thing alive, and we will see you next week with an all-new episode. Later.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save big money.